Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My guest today is Ann Duncan, the Environmental Protection Agency's Chief Information Officer. Ann, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here, Jason.
So in many ways, I've had the EPA CIO on many times on my show, but for you, this is a first time, and the reason why is because you're, quote-unquote, new to the job as CIO, though you've been acting in the position for a better part of a year or more. Let's start with your background. I always like to find out how people ended up coming to the federal government, especially someone like yourself who spent their entire career in the private sector or is right before you were working at the Palo Alto School District. So talk a little bit about your background and how you ended up here at EPA.
Just to clarify, so for the first 6 months I was here, I was a senior advisor to the administrator, so I was not in the Office of Environmental Information in that office. But since then, the last 4 months, I have been in this office, and it's been a great opportunity to get my feet wet, to understand what's going on in the agency before I jumped in to the position. Going back to getting here and why I'm here, so I did leave HP after 20 years and went to work in the public sector for the Palo Alto School District. Loved what I was doing in Palo Alto, but I had an opportunity actually through the Victory Institute. They asked me for my resume, and a couple years later, I got a phone call from the White House. And hard to pass up those opportunities when the White House calls. So was very excited about the opportunity, came out, talked to a couple agencies, and the EPA seemed like a great fit, and thinking about it was an opportunity to impact the entire country as opposed to just a small part of the country with one school district.
And do you think that when you've come into the government, there's all these acronyms, there's the learning curve, how have you been able to handle that so far? Give me a sense of some of the things you've done to kind of get up to speed.
Spending 5 years working for the state of California helped. So there are sort of pitfalls that you get into when you come from the private sector to the federal government. And I managed to escape a number of those because I had some idea of what might potentially be the case with things like procurement and hiring and such. But beyond that, the way you get speed is you talk to a lot of people, listen to what they have to say, ask lots of questions, and just try and learn about the organization and the mission.
As you've kind of grown into the role over specifically the last 4 months and when you came in as a senior advisor and you kind of learned, what was the toughest part so far? Has it been the acronyms? You can tell me. Come on.
So, you know, HP was pretty strong on acronyms, but I got to say that I don't think I ever heard a full sentence at HP that was all acronyms. And I've heard a few sentences here where I don't think there was an actual word anywhere in there. So that was tough. But no, I think there are a lot of things about the federal environment that are really different, that are challenging. And so, you know, getting used to some of the challenges with the pace of work and the rule-based obstacles, legal obstacles, were some challenges at times.
And I know coming from the private sector, the acquisition side of it gets frustrating for a lot of people because they're used to saying, well, I'm going to go out and buy that, I'll go buy it. Mm-hmm. But here in the government, obviously, the talking about rule-based, that's a big deal. Talk a little bit about your role as CIO, how you support the EPA mission. You sit in the Office of Environmental Information. Talk a little bit about what the CIO's role, and then we'll get into kind of your thought process around the CIO generally.
So the CIO role, for the most part at the EPA, is like any other CIO role you could imagine. You know, responsible from everything from making sure that we have an internet connection to the outside world to putting software on people's desks to developing new tools and implementing those. You know, there's a couple differences at EPA, right? The CIO at the EPA is responsible for the Toxic Release Inventory Program, so that's a piece of the portfolio that's actually a regulatory in nature. It's a right-to-know program that allows people to understand the toxics in their environment locally. I also have responsibility for libraries, which when you think about it, it's an information program that makes a lot of sense. My last job in Palo Alto, I also had responsibility for libraries, so that actually wasn't a change for me. Probably would never have bet that I'd have two CIO jobs in a row where I had librarians working for me, but I do. That's sort of the big picture of the job. It's not that much different than other ones. So in terms of how I see the CIO role and how I approach it, it's really coming in and understanding where the organization is and where the organization should be from a technology standpoint, and then charting a path to get there. So that's really how I approach that job. And, you know, you got to get the fundamentals right. The price of admission to do anything else as CIO is that the trains have to run on time. You know, the network has to be up and running. Email has to work. All those things have to work. And then you have to figure out what else you need to do to make the organization more effective and productive.
A lot of times when you talk to a CIO who's worked in the private sector, who's worked for a big tech company such as HP, there's an operational side that they love, and then they are launched into the CIO role, which becomes much more strategic. For you, you seem to have done both in your career. Obviously, your time at HP was probably had some operations, some technical, and then being the CIO of a school district, I'm sure that's a lot of strategy. Where do you sit when you come, now that you're at EPA, probably a foot in both sides?
Yeah, Jason, my feeling about the CIO role is that I place a tremendous value on making things work, right? On having the operations work right, on meeting deadlines, on meeting commitments, on getting the job done. But what I want to do is empower the staff to do that. I don't really want to do it myself. So I can certainly get in and solve problems. The school district had a relatively small IT staff, so I was much more likely than I had been in my last few jobs to actually get hands-on and help solve a problem. But I'd much rather set the strategy, set the expectations, and let the team do the job themselves.
CIOs tend to come in and look at the strategy, do a strategic plan, or think about some kind of update. Are you doing that here at EPA? I know it's only been 4 months, but is that on your agenda?
We actually have some stuff that we're rolling out internally in terms of what we're trying to do. It's still only gone out to a relatively small number of people in the agency, but we've got a pretty clear path charted for where we want to get during the rest of the administration.
So you're not going to share it? You're not going to tell us what's in it? I mean, come on, give us some details, right? What's your big goal? We're going to talk priorities in a second, I know. It's been probably pushing 3 years since I had the EPA CIO on my show, so there's a lot to catch up on. Let's just start with cloud. At the time when I talked to the CIO, there was several different cloud ideas, cloud projects. Give me a sense, where are you guys with cloud today, and where are you heading?
Yeah, Jason, there's a couple things going on with the cloud. I mean, the number one thing, which I think that you and Malcolm have talked about in the past, was the effort to move email to the cloud. When EPA started that, they were still using Lotus Notes. And before I got here, the transition from Lotus Notes to Office 365 was complete. And so that's finished. We're actually getting ready to upgrade our version of Office 365 to their G3 version, which will give us some additional capabilities. We're rolling out pretty aggressive efforts to use SharePoint and encouraging people strongly to start moving towards the other tools that we have available to us in Office 365. And we're actually going to be creating a marketplace where folks can easily get their SharePoint development done. So that'll be one of our tools for migrating our remaining Lotus Notes databases. We still have quite a few Lotus Notes databases. We want to look at those. We want to make sure that we consolidate similar applications. We want to look at going to, you know, existing shared services in the agency or elsewhere in the government, commercial off-the-shelf software, and then SharePoint as our next platform to do that migration for those things. So that's that piece of the cloud, and we're feeling like that's really sort of settling in now for the agency, and we're feeling good about it. And then the other piece is, you know, what do we do for our mission programs? We want to have the ability to have cloud hosting for our mission-related programs. We've done some efforts, but we're moving towards now. In fact, we're very quickly ramping up on having our National Computing Center down in North Carolina be a cloud services brokerage for the agency. So they will basically put together a group of vendors that folks can then use, and they're going to be the folks who say, you want to host program X, we need to understand your requirements, and then we're going to tell you maybe you belong in this cloud vendor A, cloud vendor B, cloud vendor C, or in fact you should be on-premise here, or maybe a hybrid cloud where we have your basic needs on-premise, but we have additional capacity in the cloud. You know, we're very interested in terms of our high-performance computing in augmenting our high-performance computing capability with cloud-based capability so that we can ramp up from a few hundred processors to a few thousand processors and then back down to meet those computing needs rather than having to perform what now is a pretty complex scheduling activity, and sometimes people wait a while to get to use that high-performance computer.
Sounds like there may be an acquisition coming, but we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to ask you that question. My guest today is Ann Duncan, the Environmental Protection Agency's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Ann Duncan, the Environmental Protection Agency's Chief Information Officer. And we left a cliffhanger at the end of the last section here. I know people are now tuning in, listening. Will there be an acquisition for the cloud broker? Just give me your thoughts about how you're getting that set up.
So right now we're doing a very simple pilot with existing capability we have. And then we're going to look at whether there's a good vehicle elsewhere. There are a couple other agencies that have some vehicles that might work. So if those work for us, we'll go there. But if they don't, you'll see an acquisition. And one would expect it would be a multi-award type vehicle.
And as far as the pilot, is this a six-month pilot, a year pilot? What's your sense of how long should you realize, yeah, this could work, or no, this approach needs to be tweaked in some way?
We're going to put a couple programs into this this summer. And so I would anticipate certainly by the end of the calendar year, we'll have a pretty good idea if we're on the right track of how we're going to do this or whether we're going to adjust.
And do you get a sense if these are mission critical programs or some of the back office stuff, HR, finance, et cetera?
So we're starting with some mission programs. We're starting with something likely out of probably out of the Office of Water, but we're not sure yet.
All right. Well, something to follow up with you on as you kind of make some progress later this year. Another priority that when I talked back in 2012 to the CIO at the time was shared services, both internal and external shared services. That's a big push from the administration, but also EPA works so closely with their state and local partners as well that shared services sometimes is going to make even more sense for you guys. So what's your thoughts around that?
Yeah, so we do have, you know, the three classes of shared services. We have shared services we're getting from other people, you know, like Office 365 in the cloud. We've got some shared services that we also get from other government entities, specifically like our HR system. So then we have shared services that we provide to other government agencies. So you're probably familiar with the fact that e-rulemaking and also FOIA Online are two government shared services. E-rulemaking is 99% of the rules in the government go through rulemaking, and we now have 11 partners on FOIA Online with another one that I can't tell you about yet, but that's signed up. So we're going to have 12 partners online for FOIA Online very soon. And then we have our internal shared services, which we are happy to share with other agencies as well, and we've had some other agencies express interest in them, but we have things like the Facility Registry Service, the Substance Registry Service. We're actually building out some services around NAICS codes that we've had some interest in from other agencies, and laws and regs are another one we're building. So those shared services are really one of the foundations for our relationships with the programs in EPA. So they use those to help facilitate their communications with the states and the tribes and the regulated community. So it's really important to us, for example, with facilities, that we all are referring to each facility uniquely. So we all know we're talking about the same facility. And when they report to each program, that each program is clear that it's the same facility or that it's a different facility. And, you know, the more people that use that inside and outside EPA, the stronger those that becomes. And that's true of many of our shared services, is that more use makes them stronger. And so, you know, we welcome both our internal partners and other agencies to use those services.
I want to back up to eFOIA on e-rulemaking. E-rulemaking is one of those programs I've followed for the last, you know, 10 years, original, you know, Quicksilver program, e-government program, whatever you want to call it. But it's also one of the ones that I think gets a lot of credit for saying, look, this works. This works really well. That gets managed out of your office. And where is that heading? How are you making that a little better, tweaking it, improving it?
Yeah, so e-rulemaking is managed out of OEI, so out of my office. And there's a couple things. First of all, we are looking at taking e-rulemaking to the cloud. So that's something we're evaluating right now. And we'll be talking to our partners about that actually next week at our governing board meeting. The other big thing is we're looking at sort of the whole regulatory development process and whether there are other pieces of that process that really should be tightly connected to e-rulemaking and that potentially could become additional shared services for us. So those are the two big things right now with e-rulemaking, but there are also some other smaller things that are really valuable to our partners. We're investigating more powerful tools around natural language understanding for natural language processing for comments that come in and a better deduplication ability so we can more easily understand things that qualify as near deduplication. If someone wrote a letter that's very similar to another letter, we can group those together. Because as you probably can guess, when we get a docket with a lot of comments, there are a very small number of unique comments and a lot of comments that are organized by groups that, you know, you can have hundreds of thousands sometimes of comments that are nearly identical.
It's interesting you bring up the idea of making things a little easier, taking it to the cloud as one example. But one of the things that we've seen as we've talked about, just about e-rulemaking, but if you look at how the Office of Management and Budget dealt with the draft FITAR guidance, mm-hmm. the Federal IT Information Reform Act, they put it on GitHub, they asked for open comments. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll be honest, GitHub and me, we don't get along too well, I don't really get it, but is something like that part of that discussion with the cloud? Maybe not GitHub, but this idea of making it easier, because you know, I've used e-rulemaking at times, and you know, it's not always easy.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's a really interesting question. So we have an API right now that we use to pull data, so someone can go to the Federal Register and make a comment, and we can pull that comment back out with our API. So the question is, where else might you want to have comments? Because it starts to get very complicated very quickly when you start thinking about places where people could comment and identifying what's actually a comment on your rule and just someone who's making a comment. So it's not, you know, it's not something that we're likely to initiate. It's something we're likely to look for from the rest of the agency saying we need some other service. I do know, as you said, OMB is using GitHub. I think there'll probably be a push for GitHub to be a place where you can comment on rules.
All right, something to look forward to. eFOIA, I know that's caused a lot of angst in the community. Talk a little bit about what the status of that project is and where is it heading as well. If you want to break a little news of who that 12th agency is, let me know.
Yeah, I don't think I'll break any news about the 12th agency. I don't want to get any phone calls. But the FOIA Online has been hugely successful. You know, when people look across government about what's working in the FOIA community, FOIA Online gets a lot of credit for things working really well for us making documents available to the public. So the system can immediately make documents available when you respond to a FOIA. So for an EPA, for example, we make everything public that we don't have a reason to make private when we respond to a FOIA. So, you know, I know FOIA is a hot topic in the government right now and will probably always be a hot topic, but we think that FOIA Online helps that transparency across the government.
Finally, just one last thing on shared services. There's been a lot of movement for financial management to take it to a shared service provider. There's a lot of movement around even HR. I know payroll, for instance, is one that everyone's already using a shared service provider. Are you looking at those outside services but internal to the government still for finance, for HR, for even acquisition?
So we certainly explore, you know, all our options when we go to make a change. The challenge, of course, with those programs like HR, business, you know, the financials, is that there are lots of tentacles into the rest of your organization. And one of the things we find out is Superfund accounting turns out to be pretty interesting and unusual. So as we look at how we potentially can change things, we have to figure out how Superfund accounting impacts the ability to use other services. So we don't have any active programs going on right now to move any of those things. But if we did, we certainly would look across the government.
Third priority before we move on to some new stuff is this Central Data Exchange, CDX. Big effort going on at EPA for a number of years. Give us the latest with that. How's that progressing and where do you see it going?
You know, CDX is great, and it's, you know, really a cornerstone of our work in the EPA around collecting regulatory data. It's going to be a cornerstone of eEnterprise for the Environment, which is a program that will totally change how we interact, with the regulated community, the states, and the tribes. CDX right now, we continually are increasing the number of data flows that flow through CDX. And we've been doing some great partnering things with CDX. We're in the process of developing the ability to allow people to authenticate using Federation. So if they've got a Google account for a low-level authentication, they can authenticate actually to us through Google and other services, like not just Google, but other services. We actually also just implemented a project that simplifies Chrome Air-compliant registration on CDX. So that it's a much simpler identity proofing process than we've had in the past. I think that they reduced by about 80% the number of screens that someone has to go through to do that identity proofing. So big improvement there. And then obviously we've also been doing some things in the cloud. So there's now a virtual CDX node that's in the cloud that communities can use instead of using their on-premise CDX node.
Let's take a quick break. We come back, we'll jump into some new priorities. My guest today is Ann Duncan, the Environmental Protection Agency's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Ann Duncan, the Environmental Protection Agency's Chief Information Officer. Now, Ann, we spent the first half of the show just talking about older priorities. You mixed in some new ones in there as you talked about what you're looking for going forward. E-rulemaking is one, cloud is another one. But let's jump right into it. What are you hoping to get done over the next 6 or 9 months?
So yeah, we have a busy agenda, as I think all the CIOs in the government do over the next few months. I certainly would be remiss if I didn't start off by mentioning that we're working on security, right? Cybersecurity is a big topic right now, and it's always something on our agenda. It will always be something on our agenda, and so we'll continue in that vein, trying to improve our security posture. The other couple really big initiatives that we have going on right now, our digital services, which we've positioned ourselves as an early adopter in digital services, and we're very, very excited about the work we're already doing with some of our programs, and we're going to accelerate that work over the next few months. We're partnering with 18F for some things in that area. FITARA is obviously a big topic for us, and I personally think that the combination of FITARA and digital services are sort of a perfect storm of opportunity to change the way we do our work in the agency. I mentioned before E-Enterprise for the Environment, which is not an IT program per se. E-Enterprise is a program designed to, again, change the way we work with the states, the tribes, and the regulated community, but it is a large IT component that I think is going to help us, again, as a third leg to that transformational stool with digital services and FITARA. You know, also on the sort of the more mundane end of the spectrum, we are getting tablets out for our users. They want more mobility, and we're trying to support that. We're also, as more of an agency program, we're starting to do more and more with sensors and, you know, the broader Internet of Things, which, you know, drives a lot of more and more data coming in that we're managing.
All right, a lot going on. Got to start with cyber. You know that, as you said, it's a big deal. We've talked a lot about the OPM cyber breach over the last few weeks. Give me a sense from your perspective. It's a pretty big wake-up call for a lot of CIOs I've talked to. From a cybersecurity perspective, what are you guys doing? And I know there's some sensitivities, but what can you tell us about some of the steps you're taking?
You know, I think that everyone in the government is looking at a lot of the same things right now. It's no secret that there's a 30-day cyber sprint going on, so obviously a lot of our attention is focused on looking at those things that are on that list, making sure we're in good shape. And, you know, some of those things feel a little bit, like shoring up the base, right, making sure you're taking care of things that you probably already should have been taking care of. But some of them are also about thinking about security a little differently. And, you know, we've had some great conversations over the last several months, not just since the breach, about, you know, the difficulties of security and the world we live in, and changing our way of looking at things so that should you get breached, that you are protecting the things that are most important to you rather than trying to drive the same level of protection across your entire agency. So that's, I think it's a big difference in the way a lot of people are approaching it. If you talk to some of the big companies out there, many of them have stopped even trying to protect their perimeter. They know that that's a waste of their time. We're not ready to give up on protecting our perimeter, but we do know that we have to take care of those high-value things.
There's several cross-agency priority goals that the White House has put out around cyber, two-factor authentication, CDM, TIC is three of them. Give me a sense of how those things are impacting or making EPA at least a little more secure.
Well, certainly, you know, one of the things we know is that two-factor authentication is a huge deterrent for someone from getting into your system, right? It's one thing to steal username and password. It's another thing to get a physical object that you need in order to make that username and password valuable. So we think two-factor authentication is important. There are also some challenges in terms of getting two-factor authentication on every single box and device out on your network. So we need to look at the high-value places where we should be putting that as a higher priority than everywhere. But we want every user authenticating with two-factor in the future.
You mentioned the cyber sprint as well. I got a chance to talk to federal CIO Tony Scott recently about the cyber sprint. And one of the things he said was that will help us do certain things very quickly to make a big difference. And then we have some longer-term things, looking even at what he called a federal civilian cybersecurity strategy. Who's leading that cyber sprint effort in your office? I mean, obviously, it starts with you, but your CISO or your deputy CIO, and then how's that kind of being spread out across the agency from a communication standpoint?
Yeah, so we've got our CISO, obviously, in the lead, and he has got a tiger team from several offices, folks who have good depth in IT who we could pull off of their regular jobs to spend a little extra time with us and think outside the box, and they have been able to think outside the box about how to respond to some things in different ways. But, you know, this is great, but a sprint is just that, right? As Tony says, there's a long-term strategy. And we can't think that just because we did a sprint, it's going to make a huge difference in our posture or that it's going to be everything we need to do. So the big focus is, what's our long-term strategy? You know, we've been in a long-term conversation in the organization with our senior leadership about what we need to do to better fund and support and to change the culture of how we think about security in the agency.
All right, I know we could probably spend the rest of the show on security, but you got a lot more priorities going on. So let me jump into digital. You made a nice little splash when you brought over Greg Godbout from 18F. I almost said stole, but I thought that maybe would be unfair. Give me a sense of digital services. Are you building a team, I guess, under Greg? And then what kind of projects are you working on with 18F?
Yeah, we are building a team under Greg, but more importantly, we're also embedding digital services type folks into our organization. So our goal is not to get a group of people who are going to come in, be the fire jumper and jump into this program, fix it and leave. Our goal is to embed folks with these skills into our programs long term, and that they will teach the long term feds about how to do agile and agile procurement, agile development, and the long term feds will teach them about how to work in the government and the challenges, and we will have a great partnership. And then if we don't renew these 2-year terms or 4-year terms, at the end we will have those skills. They won't disappear. So Greg's going to have a small team that's going to help the rest of the organization, and he's already doing that. And then we're engaging right now with 18F for those resources, for resource augmentation. But we're actually in the process of creating a fellowship so we can get our own folks in here that will, you know, again, 18F may help us with sourcing on some of those, but they're actually going to be, you know, EPA-badged employees who are going to be part of our teams across the agency.
That's probably the biggest challenge agencies face, the culture change of getting those concepts of digital services think a little differently, but finding the people to actually bring that culture change to fore. Have you gone down that path? Have you started to hire? Have you started to look for those different type of thinker people? Or you said you're creating a fellowship, so maybe you're not quite ready to do that yet.
Yeah, so far we've got a couple resources in that we're borrowing from 18F that, you know, obviously we're paying for, not out of the goodness of their heart. So we've got those few resources. We are getting ready to start fill that pipeline. You know, I believe that when people see what we're doing, they're going to want to come here, right? We've got a couple, and again, I can't tell you who, we got a couple really exciting hires that we're going to see coming in really soon. Maybe not another Greg, but some very exciting people that we are looking forward to having as part of our team. And, you know, we're hoping that as people see how we're changing OEI and we're changing EPA software development culture, that people will come and say, hey, that looks really fun. I want to be there.
And I know you'll probably reach back to your Silicon Valley friends, the Palo Alto friends, and see who you can maybe steal from there for a short 2-year sprint. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can jump into some of your other priorities. My guest today is Ann Duncan, the Environmental Protection Agency's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Profile America, Thursday, July 9th. One of the most important inventions of our times was announced in early July 1948 in a press release by Bell Laboratories in New Jersey. The transfer resistance device, far better known as the transistor. The simple, small, and tough transistor replaced fragile and heat-generating vacuum tubes, which had been the heart of electronics for decades. The discovery led to the development of the integrated circuit and the microprocessor that are the basis of modern electronics. Today, transistor technology makes possible the devices we take for granted in daily life. Computers, cell phones, and video games, as well as satellites and medical equipment. Making semiconductors and other components for electronics is a $104 billion per year business employing 263,000 people in nearly 4,200 businesses. Profile America is in its 19th year as a public service of the U.S. Census Bureau.
This is Mark Amtower. With lower margins, your limited marketing budget has to work harder than ever. LinkedIn is one of the most robust marketing platforms available. With over 350 million members worldwide, 110 million in the U.S., and 3.1 million members within 50 miles of this station, I guarantee your customers and prospects are here. Connect, influence, motivate, create leads. I can show you how. When you want to maximize the return on your LinkedIn presence, email me at mark@federaldirect.net.
Like Federal News Radio on Facebook for a look at some of the top federal stories each day. Plus, we'll give you a taste of what goes on behind the scenes. Find us at facebook.com/Federal News Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Ann Duncan, the Environmental Protection Agency's Chief Information Officer. And before break, we talked a little bit about digital services, the fact that you guys are growing this within the agency. And you brought up the old culture change discussion. And one thing that I think a lot of CIOs are going down the path of is really to integrate innovation, to really get people to think a little differently, take some smart risks to address their mission areas in a different way than maybe before. How are you kind of addressing that innovation, that culture challenge?
So Jason, there you go. There's my answer. We're trying to get people to take some smart risks. In fact, there was a headline, I think, that came out a few weeks ago saying, you know, EPA CIO wants her folks to take, and thankfully they said smart risks. Because we do. We want people to recognize that we need to change our behaviors and that, you know, right now I think we take big risks without realizing them. We say we're going to do this program and we're going to define the requirements and then in 5 years we're going to deliver something and it's going to be perfect. And it's not. In fact, it's not at all what we wanted. We took a huge risk without even acknowledging it. So instead we want people to really think about what they're doing, to talk to their leadership and to say, this is the risk I'm going to take. And if you take a risk and you make a mistake or it doesn't work out and you spent $10,000, we can move on from that. If you go and spend $200 million and it fails, there's not a lot moving on from that that's going to look good or have a good outcome. So that's one of the things. Another huge thing that we're really trying to focus on is creating a sense of urgency, right? We have lots of really great employees who really work hard and who care about what they do, who are simply resigned to the idea that it takes forever to do something in government. And so we're trying to get them to understand that you can actually do stuff quickly and deliver results quickly, which is at the core of Agile anyway. So it's really important for people to say, yeah, I can do a 4-week sprint and I can actually produce something that a user can look at. Okay, and then the third thing I think that's really important is that we're trying to move away from stakeholder-centered design to customer-centered design. We want to do stuff that is what our customers need, not what necessarily what the people who are paying the bill need.
One thing whenever we talk about smart risks and changing the culture is the idea of top cover. I had a very interesting conversation with the Homeland Security Department Chief Procurement Officer, Soraya Correa, recently, and they're setting up something called a Procurement Innovation Lab. And she says, if we succeed, the person whose idea was and did the work gets all the credit. If we fail, I take all the blame. How do you create that message to your employees, to the missionaries, to say, smart risks, I'm here, I got your back?
So, and that's a great point. And that's, you know, fundamentally, that's what managers are supposed to do, right? They're supposed to give credit to their team, and they're supposed to take blame, right? So if it goes wrong, it's my fault. If you do well, it's yours. Your accomplishment. So the way I think you create that top coverage, you say that you have the conversation with people, and I have had this conversation with our team on numbers of occasions that said, you tell me what you want to do. You make sure that you've told your manager and that they've told their manager and that we have aligned up the management chain. And then I'm committed that if you do what you say you were going to do and it doesn't go well, that we have your back, right? If you do something crazy and don't talk to us, I don't have your back because you didn't talk to me about it. But as long as we're all aligned on what you're doing, it's my job to make sure that you don't take the fall for something we agreed you would do.
Are you seeing that starting to happen because you're created this digital services office or group and you bring in someone like Greg Gobbout and then you're bringing some resources from 18F? Are you starting to see a little bit of change happening?
Yeah, we're starting to see a little bit of change happening in terms of people trying new things, right? Because right now that's kind of the risk. It's like, oh, Agile's new, it's different. I don't really know what that is. And in fact, to be honest, we found little pockets of Agile and we started poking around, right? We had some people who started, you know, talking and they're like, and we're doing this many sprints and I'm sort of doing the math in my head and it's like every 3 weeks. And so there's some really great stuff going on. So we're starting to see that build and grow and people feel excited about that. The other thing, you know, you talk about going up and down the chain, but one of the other things is we're trying to create communication that doesn't go up and down the chain, all the steps, right? That we flatten that chain, that we flatten the communication, that I'm not saying, you know, go do something and tell me and don't tell your manager, but you don't have to work all the way up through the chain. You can say, send a message to all of us at once and say, hey, this is what I'm doing, right? We want to empower people to feel like they have some more freedom to make good decisions, to communicate to us, to give us enough lead time if we have to say, whoa, time out. but not to have something take 6 weeks to go up and 6 weeks to come back down.
And I think that's the key word you mentioned was empower, which was a great segue to FITARA, the Federal IT Acquisition Reform Act. You as the CIO are being empowered or have been empowered by Congress. Give me the sense of how EPA is creating a baseline due by August 15th and then going to start begin the implementation.
So, you know, FITARA was in force the day they passed the law. So we've actually been doing some implementation things before the guidance came out. We've been trying to not do anything we couldn't turn around if the guidance was substantially different. First thing we did was we put someone in charge because it's, you know, good project. You put a project manager in place. So we've got a project manager, and her role is to work across the agency to put this baseline together. We started back a few months ago with reviews of projects. We tried to catch stuff that was on its way out the door and do some minor modifications so that we could make those programs that we could then go back and make changes to later, because we were committed to, you know, not stopping a lot of things, because you know, you get someone who's been working on an acquisition for 2 years and you come in the day before the award, it's not really fair to them to say, oops, the whole law changed and I don't like the way you're doing this. So instead we said, next year when your option comes up, we'd like to talk about this in more detail. So let's get back together in 6 months. So we've been doing a lot of that. We've been having conversations about what a bureau CIO is. We don't have any people who you'd call a bureau CIO, but we have people with IT responsibilities who reside outside of OEI, and so we're having those conversations about who those people are, what their authorities are, what their obligations are to me in the future. And, you know, we're also having those conversations about the budget. Those are the three biggest areas. Obviously, FITARA brings in some other things, some of which were already happening, like data center consolidation, but those are the three areas we're putting our big focus on.
Did it surprise you when you became the CIO about the federated model or that was used in the government? I mean, EPA is a little different than commerce, which is a little different than agriculture, which is a little different than so on and so forth. The fact is that you didn't have this line of sight on the budget as much as maybe other CIOs in the private sector do.
It's interesting because in the private sector, the consumerization of IT has pushed some non-core stuff out. So the right now, the private sector and the public sector are sort of going in opposite directions as the private sector distributes more and the public sector recognizes it's too distributed. So I wasn't that surprised, in part because I had spent 5 years working in the public sector and I saw the same thing in the state of a great amount of distribution. The idea that the CIO, though, doesn't run the HR system or the business system is a little shocking when you come in, because those are, in any business, those are really core things, and you wouldn't hand them to anybody else because that's the CIO's job. So there are a lot of mission-critical systems that are run outside of OEI. You know, they're run in most cases by very capable, competent, professional people who are doing great IT work. They're just not part of the IT organization.
One of the things that I've heard CIOs talk about and that they're hopeful FITARA will help with is the idea of shadow IT. Is that something that, one, is a problem for EPA that you've seen? A lot of times you don't know because it's in the shadows. And two, is that something that you hope FITARA will help you kind of get under more control?
You know, I think that the biggest advantage of FITARA for us is some of the little stuff, right? So what we find is we've had duplication in small applications because nobody knows what anybody else is doing. And so we were already going down the road of how do we manage to track the little stuff in the portfolio? Because in a lot of cases you say, I'm just going to look at the big stuff. But the little stuff does sort of add up. If you've got 36 different people who are developing an asset tracking application, even though it might just be a little database that they did on the weekend, that adds up. And so trying to get a hold of that stuff and push people in a direction where they're sharing those tools, and then we lose the overhead of having to roll all that stuff up, is one thing. But the bigger thing, I think, for FITARA is it's going to help us implement the programs we have better. We're taking that combination, like I said, of FITARA and digital services, and so we're bringing in new ways of doing business, and we're using FITARA as an opportunity to make it easier to get people to the table to talk about that.
You brought up an asset tracking system. Perfect segue again to discuss around big data. You said one of your priorities was more sensors, more the Internet of Things in a sense. EPA deals with a ton of data. How are you guys using analytics? How are you kind of grabbing hold of this big data problem and trying to manage it?
So we are in the process of working through our data analytics program design. We're ramping up our staff in that area, bringing on a few key people, not a lot, but a few key people to really lead that program, thinking about whether we're going to have someone we call our chief data officer or not, So that's going to be an interesting question as to whether we want to create someone with that title, but we certainly have people thinking hard about it. We've got some pilots that are running across the agency where we look at data that comes in from multiple regulatory programs where people are reporting separately. So you might report on the same facility to the air program and to the water program. And, you know, is there something that's interesting about the intersection of the data that causes us to either say that company is maybe not being truthful, that company has an issue that might turn into a serious problem, being able to analyze the data and look for those patterns and trends. And then, as we mentioned, the Internet of Things, lots of sensor data. We would like to have sensor data for air and for water, both in generally public spaces like streams and park benches, but also in the regulated community in a smokestack, for example. You know, it saves a tremendous amount of money to have a sensor out there. It also means that instead of gathering, you know, maybe one data point a week, you're gathering a data point every 30 seconds or every 10 seconds or every 5 minutes, depending upon the sensor. So there's a lot of opportunity to get great data, but then you have to figure out what to do with all that data and how do you make sure it's good data, right? Whether it's coming from your sensor or coming from a person who's being a citizen scientist, how do you make sure that it's good data, it's clean, that there wasn't a motorboat idling by your sensor and suddenly the temperature goes up 25 degrees for 10 minutes and then it drops back down, right? You don't want that data. You want to throw that data out. So how do you clean that data? And then how do you analyze all that data? So tremendous amount of questions that we have about how to do that. And we're just running pilots with various types of programs to help us get a better feel for it.
And I guess the other question is, as agencies move to the commoditization of IT, then the CIO, which is Chief Information Officer, as you know, and then you have a chief data officer, and really, are we playing semantics between data and information? As the cloud becomes bigger, as commodity IT moves out to a cloud, to almost managed service, do those two roles come together in 3, 5, 7 years? I mean, how much, is there a big difference between data and information in your eyes?
You know, that's an interesting question. I think that there may not, all depending upon how you slice it, right, is data the raw material and information what you learn about it, right? Because that's generally how people define these things, is you turn data into information. But I also think we've used that information, Chief Information Officer title, as a broad overarching title that includes, you know, work with infrastructure all the way to doing things with the information. So I don't think those two roles converge per se, but I think that, you know, the CIO role is constantly changing, and there are, you know, there's a whole group of people out there who think the CIO is going away. I don't quite see how the CIO is going away, as long as unless you run an organization that everything is completely outsourced, which there are some startups out in the Bay Area who are doing just that, but you don't see a lot of big companies in that space.
You also brought up the idea of looking at data analytics, data tools. You said some pilots are ongoing. Again, do you foresee potential acquisitions? Do you foresee borrowing from other agencies? Where do you see this effort kind of heading, again, 6 or 9 months?
So, you know, building out the analytics platform is on our list. We need to fund that, and we haven't quite figured that out yet. But we will most likely build our analytics platform out in the cloud, because one of the things that we have learned very quickly is data analytics is one of those spaces where you might like to try a tool, and you don't like it, right? So instead of me buying licenses, getting a tool for you, you know, ATOing that tool, and you try it and then say, oh, that's not really working for me, we can spin someone up in the cloud on a tool in the matter of minutes. They can try it out. If that's not the right thing for them, they just stop using it and try something else. So I think at least, certainly until we get a really good handle on what analytics tools are going to be most helpful in the EPA, that's going to be our approach.
And we're almost out of time. Before I let you go, I know a lot of vendors listen to the show, so I got to ask the vendor question. What should vendors know about working with your office? I think you said they should call you all the time, right?
Yeah, Jason, they should just pick up the phone. No, they should not call. If they call, I probably won't pick up the phone. And if I do, I probably won't be expecting a vendor on the other end. Emailing our office is really the best way to get a hold of us. We tend to really want to reach out to people when we're ready to talk about something. But we understand that vendors want to get in touch, and they could certainly email our office. And, you know, we'll try and direct them to the right person who might be interested in what they need.
Very good advice. Do not call. I think that's the best advice. All right. Anne Duncan is the Environmental Protection Agency's Chief Information Officer. Anne, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Thanks, Jason.
You've been listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.